Hello and welcome to this episode 2 of Conversations on Culture, a podcast series produced by the Mathers Museum of World Cultures at Indiana University, with support from Indiana Humanities. I'm your host, John Kay. In this episode, I talk with South Arts folklorist and senior program director Teresa Hollingsworth about The Sum of Many Parts, a large exhibit of quilts made by 25 contemporary American artisans. Katie Malone joins the interview and explains her work overseeing the design of this exhibition, which opened in Shanghai in September 2012. Let's move into our interview.
This is Teresa Hollingsworth. I'm the Senior Program Director for South Arts in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm also the Staff Folklorist for South Arts.
And my name is Katie Malone, and I am a program director here at South Arts, and I oversee our touring exhibition program, and I kind of specialize in exhibit design.
And you all have just done a wonderful collaborative exhibition. Can you tell us just a little bit about the project, The Sum of Many Parts? Can you describe what that project was?
Project that was proposed to us by our colleagues at a sister regional arts organization, Arts Midwest, which is located in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And they have a great deal of experience working and developing international programs. This is actually one of the first international projects that South Arts has been involved with. We've done a smaller exhibit in the past, and we've also worked on a couple of music projects, but really this is the first large-scale exhibition that we have ever curated and designed to travel outside of the United States. And when we were approached with the project, of course, they came to us and wanted to do a quilt exhibit, and we have an embarrassment of riches as far as both contemporary and traditional quilters in the Southeast. And with South Arts, we work with 9 southern states: Alabama, Georgia, North and South Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Obviously, those were not in alphabetical order. And our colleagues at Arts Midwest, they work with 9 states in their region, which includes North and South Dakota, Michigan, Minnesota, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio. I believe I have all of those. So when we were developing the exhibit, we decided that we wanted to include quilters from all 18 states. And we were limited in the number of quilts that we could select and the number of quilters that we could invite to participate. But we did decide on the random number of 25. Also, because of pre-existing contacts and relationships that Arts Midwest has in China, there was a request from an official in that country that we also include a traditional Hawaiian quilt. And if you're familiar with Hawaiian quilting, it's very distinctive. It's often very reflective of the natural environment and botanicals in Hawaii. So we have 19 states included in the project.
Well, that's amazing. That's really a rich cross section, a swath of the United States and quilts. But I know you got asked to do the quilt exhibit for very particular reasons. Can you outline some of those reasons? Why quilts? Why not basketry, or why not musical instrument making or something like that? Why quilts?
Well, the Arts Midwest had received a grant from the U.S. Embassy in Beijing to perform this exhibit specifically because not only did their contact at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing have a personal interest in quilt making. He has, the cultural officer at the time had a sister who was an avid quilt maker in Oregon, and he really knew the art form well and loved it. So when he approached Arts Midwest to do a cultural exchange, quilts were the first thing on his mind. But when they started having the discussions thereafter, they realized that it was kind of a natural fit for the Chinese culture because China, of course, is really known for its rich and diverse textile heritage. So the thought that bringing our rich cultural heritage of quilt making to China would be make a universal language through the arts that would be a little more unique than, say, any other kind of art form. Plus, the fact that it's a utilitarian object originally and that it's a craft object also makes it a little easier for a different culture to digest. They don't necessarily have quilt making traditionally in China as we do here, but they understand blankets and weaving and patchwork and making of textiles at the core of their culture. So it would be a natural fit for them to understand, you know, our quilts through their experiences and thereby having a true dialogue artistically with the United States.
And also logistically, shipping and installing textiles can be much simpler than many other art forms. Obviously, there are still museum standards that we adhere to, but it's much easier to ship textiles than it is, as you mentioned, ceramics, instruments, other art forms.
That's true. And even though textiles still require, you know, certain environmental controls, it wouldn't necessarily be as fragile as, say, an instrument or other types of things. And that was definitely made it a good idea for an international show that would be traveling thousands of miles.
Now, Teresa, you're a folklorist. You're usually when we have folklorists on the podcast, we're talking about traditional culture, things that pass down from one generation to the next. And while the exhibit had that content in it, it also was much more diverse than that. Can you talk about what was taken to China? What types of art, what types of quilts were present, and who were the artists that were featured in this exhibition?
Well, we did not have any problems finding wonderful quilts and fabulous quilters to work with. First of all, we started this process by contacting our colleagues in the 19 different states that we were working with. We talked to folklorists working with state arts agencies and working with museums. We talked with directors and curators at museums and craft centers. We worked with contacts at some community centers and at some other nonprofit organizations. So we spent several months gathering a lot of information, looking at the different types of quilts, talking to a lot of different quilters, learning more about their stories, their heritage, how they came to the art form. So there was a bit of long-distance field work, I guess you could say, in the initial stages of the planning and development of the exhibit. We did have a tremendous amount of support from the senior curatorial advisor on the project, Dr. Marcia McDowell from Michigan State University and from the Great Lakes Quilt Center at MSU. So we were constantly consulting one another. Really, it was a pretty tough decision narrowing down the types of quilts and the quilters that would be included. We wanted to include diversity as far as the age range of quilters. We wanted to include a number of cultural communities. And we also wanted to include a male quilter. You know, so many times we associate quilting as only a female art form. And we wanted to illustrate the fact that there are men quilting in the United States. And one of the interesting things that we discovered along the way is that so many of the contemporary quilters that we worked with talked about how they had been influenced by traditional quilters and by traditional quilting techniques as far as the development and evolution of their own art form as contemporary textile artists. So there's a rich history that obviously is associated with traditional quilting, but is very much evident in contemporary quilt design and construction also. And I thought I'd let Katie talk about a couple of specifics of quilters that we worked with.
Sure. It was really an invaluable experience getting to know all of the folklorists and people that we worked with. It really took a village to find quilters from 19 states while we were here in our offices, mostly in Atlanta. And we were able to bring in quilters from, like Teresa said, all kinds of communities. And thinking in particular, we were able to bring in some Native American quilters. We have two that are involved that both are living and working in the Midwest, Bonnie LeBou and Pat Stewen, both of whom live on reservations, work in the traditional Native American quilting and provided us with star quilts, traditional Native American star quilts. We also were able to find our male quilter that Teresa talked about, Eric Wolfmeyer, who's a gentleman who actually went to art school, was trained as an artist, and then later decided that he would take on quilting as his art form of choice. Contrast him with our quilter, Louisiana Bendolf, who came from G's Bend, who grew up quilting, who was trained by her mother and her grandmothers and her mother-in-law to quilt in the G's Bend tradition in Alabama. And she never even considered herself an artist until curators came and told her that she was an artist. She just made quilts. So it was such a rich diversity in not only styles, but also influence. It was really interesting, too, that as we were getting to know our quilters and inviting them to be involved with the show, we found that many of them knew of each other, and some of them had even influenced each other and inspired each other throughout the years. In fact, Eric Wolfmeyer happened to call one of the other quilt makers, Caroline Trumpold, our quilt maker who made our whole cloth quilt. He actually called her before the show his quilting grandmother. So the fact that we didn't know about that relationship before, but it just kind of happened as we opened up and made this community of quilters for our exhibit was really wonderful happenstance.
I think quilting is one of those genres that we can sometimes get nostalgic about and sentimental about, and we think about it as this old-timey craft that's very localized and very, very small in community. But in reality, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, and people are connected through Facebook groups and web chat rooms and all of that. So people from all over the world are actually in communication about making quilts.
You know, one of the other interesting things about this project is that the exhibit itself is traveling for about a year in China, and it's going to six different communities. And often when we use the term community, we're thinking about several thousand people, when in fact in China, the communities that the Sum of Many Parts is visiting will be seen when it completes its tour by millions of people. It's been really phenomenal, the impact and the welcome atmosphere that the exhibit has received. And throughout this project, we have had the opportunity to send a number of the quilters participating in the exhibit to China to be there for opening events at different museums, to participate in educational workshops, whether these workshops and sessions have been with middle school or high school university students or with other textile artists within communities, with other museum professionals in major cities. It's been a great opportunity for us to be able to actually send both traditional and contemporary quilters to interact with community members who are seeing and experiencing their artwork.
That's true. And to that point, we found that actually there's something quite fascinating. You mentioned that we think of quilting in a nostalgic way. But two of our artists, Carol Harris and Louisiana Bendolf, two very different artists, both African-American women, but Carol Harris is a very contemporary quilter, and Louisiana is the traditional quilter I mentioned before. They both found that in China, their methods of quilt making are actually kind of revolutionary. They both work very instinctually with their fabrics and piece things together with, you know, without necessarily having a pre-designed plan. They're very abstract designs, maybe based on cityscapes or buildingscapes that they see in their life, but they're not representational, not narrative quilts. To the Chinese people that they encountered when they were in China talking to these audiences, that was an idea that kind of blew people's minds, because they didn't have botanicals or animal life or some kind of storytelling within their quilts that was of a narrative. So it was actually interesting to find that the things that we think of in art making or quilt making that might be, you know, a little more instinctual to the Chinese culture is actually very,
very relatable.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the point that both of you all have made, I want you to flesh out a little bit more, is why are these type of projects important? Why are these types of cultural exchange programs, especially those that deal with the folk and traditional arts, why are those important to share?
Well, I think it's crucial that we share our cultural exchanges, and in particular, thinking about this exhibit, you know, we see certain aspects of Chinese culture through the media and through news reports and things like that, but we don't really know the everyday person. And the same goes for them knowing us. They see us through movies, they see us through news reports and maybe what their government tells them about what's going on with our international relationships. But it's a different, completely different ballgame when you introduce people to people. And the most ground-level way to do that is through our artwork. Artwork and cultural exchange, and in particular craft, is a worldwide experience. It's a worldwide, you know, we may have different visual language, we may have different templates we use, but every culture across the world makes craft, and every culture has their own traditional arts. And if you can make an exchange through the arts, it's a much more personal and universal way of communicating that brings people together in a way that's more relatable and more real than just talking about what our governments are doing.
And actually, there's a program through the U.S. State Department called Art in Embassies. And it's a program that actually last year celebrated its 50th anniversary. And the vast majority of those exhibits and exchanges have featured contemporary and fine arts over the last 50 years. So it's very exciting for us to be able to include traditional arts in this type of programming.
That's amazing. I hadn't heard of that program before, so I think it's really, really great to take advantage of those types of things, to really take the things that aren't showing the aesthetics and innovations of a few, but actually the cultural traditions of many. What were some kind of surprises from this project? I think about the projects that I've worked on. There's always things that don't work out the way that you plan, and some things that are actually better than what you plan that kind of emerge from them. I can only imagine that that's even heightened when you start talking about these kind of cross-cultural presentations.
Well, we've been very pleased with the museum organizations that we've had the honor to work with over the course of the exhibit, and we've been very pleased with the individual installations. But I think the highlight has been the interaction between the quilters, the museum staff, the students, community members. I mean, you just can't put a price tag on that. There have been so many wonderful stories that quilters have shared with us. Katie and I were actually able to travel to Shanghai last fall for an opening there with two of the quilters, Eric Wolfmeyer and also Louisiana Bendoff. And for us, it was fascinating also to watch the two quilters interact with one another, for them to talk about their influences, for them to learn from each other. It was just in a foreign setting. And it was interesting that even though geographically they don't live that far really from one another in the United States, that they had to go to the other side of the world to have that kind of conversation. One of the things that I found so surprising when we spoke with university student groups was that I think in the United States we have the misconception that everyone knows about us and that everyone understands us, and that's not necessarily true with students that we were able to meet. They have very little knowledge about the United States. We asked them what they knew about our country, and they mentioned jazz music and Disney World. So many of their references were associated with popular culture, not necessarily with other art forms in our country, not necessarily with the history of our country. We also forget that we're a very new country compared to so many others in the rest of the world, that we have a very recent history compared to China. So that was a reminder for us also.
And logistically speaking, putting this exhibit together was actually relatively easy, which I know sounds kind of shocking when you think about and it's a little shocking to me in the beginning. I thought, how on earth are we going to do this when Arts Midwest approached us? But in the end, it's turned out to be kind of delightful. And the key to that was the wonderful delineation of task and mutual respect that we had between all of the partnerships that we formed to create this exhibit. South Arts knew, you know, we knew our job in the grand scheme. Arts Midwest had their job in the grand scheme. And then the U.S. Embassy in Beijing had their job in the grand scheme of things. And that delineation of task really helped us keep things on track. And the trust we had in each other helped make it kind of painless to execute the exhibit itself. Believe it or not.
It's actually been a much simpler process than many of the exhibits we have mounted in the United States, quite frankly. It's been a great experience. And we've also been really pleased with the interest in this country about the exhibit. We can't go into great detail at this point, but we are anticipating a stateside tour of the exhibit or a partial installation of the exhibit stateside in the future, in the next few years.
And that comes back to one of my kind of a follow-up question. We've been talking as if the exhibit is over, but it's actually going on. What's the length of the run and where all will it be?
Well, right now it's in Dalian, which is a city in northeast China. Next, it'll be going on to Wuhan Museum in Wuhan in the Hunan province of China. Just had to make sure I had the right name. And after that, we're hoping it'll close in Beijing. And it'll be closing late this summer, and then it'll be returning here to the U.S. It's a little more than halfway through its tour. Like Teresa said, it's going to be going to 6 exhibits. It's at its fourth one right now, and it has 2 more to go.
I asked that question because I know that my listeners, I probably have about a 10% listenership from China for some reason for this podcast.
Fantastic. Well, please go see it at the Wuhan Museum, and then go see it at, we're thinking it's going to be at the Museum of Women and Children in Beijing.
So this is a wonderful first project on doing this type of cross-culture work. Do you think that there'll be some future efforts on this?
We hope so. It's been such a great experience for South Arts, and I think that the 25 quilters that we have worked with would also say it's been a tremendous experience. So we hope to work on new international projects in the future.
You've been listening to Conversations on Culture, a podcast produced by the Mathers Museum of World Cultures at Indiana University.